He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
Telling it like it is. Giving you both sides of the story. This is Katz at Night.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
Now, here's John Katzimatidis.
This is Katz at Night. This is John Katzimatidis. And all day long with WABC, how we've been celebrating Happy New Year, Russian New Year, and we may have somebody calling in from Moscow, and who knows who it could be, this is a TriCast. It's Friday afternoon, TGIF. We're on 970 AM, The Answer. We're on 770 WABC, and we're on 107.1 in the studio with us. We got Governor Patterson. How are you, Governor?
I'm very good, John. It's also Happy New Year in the Ukraine.
Happy New Year. And we have Judge Richard Weinberg.
Happy New Year to everyone.
Happy New Year. And Lydia Serrani.
Lady in red.
Lady in red. Celebrating New Year's today. And
Mr. Bird.
Today, our dreams came true. We understand that the killer of that poor gal on Burger King on 116th Street and Lexington Avenue looks like the killer was caught. And with us today is...
We have NYPD Chief of Detectives James Essig. I watched that press conference that you held a short time ago with Mayor Adams. Just incredible, incredible police work, good old-fashioned police work. Welcome, Chief of Detectives James Essig. Can you tell us more about how you guys, the detectives, were able to arrest this suspect and do it so well?
Hey, good afternoon, everybody, and thanks for having me. Can't speak highly enough of the Manhattan North detectives, the 2-5 Precinct Detective Squad, or Detective Santana, the Homicide Squad, everybody who was involved in that. But, you know, we all seen that horrific video in the Burger King where a 19-year-old teenage woman working at 12:30 at night is shot and killed. You look at the, you know, when we talk about the good old-fashioned police detective work, tracking video, making connections as the killer changed his clothes based on video evidence, and then tracking that video evidence where we were able to ID him. And then a little further down the line, we were able to identify that he was a worker at that Burger King in 2020. So now we know we're on to the right person. And we track him into Brooklyn, and we do what NYPD detectives do. We pick him up last night, and he's charged with that murder.
Wow. Wow. So how bad of a criminal record does this guy have, detective?
Not an extensive record. You know, he had 4 prior arrests. The last one was a menacing with a knife, assault, nothing that would lead to something of this nature where he's carrying a gun and then committing a homicide. We see people in the past, you see their records, a heavy record. This guy really didn't have a heavy past, which would lead him to this type of crime.
You know, the one thing nobody could understand, maybe you got some answers here, is why did he shoot this poor gal? He had the money and he was leaving.
We're still investigating that. If you look at the video, he grabs that first register. He gets $100 or so. He had worked in that place in the past, so he knew where the other money was called, where it was dropped into the safe. She did not have the keys to that. He's yelling at her, give me more money, give me more money. And then he fires a shot. So he was obviously desperate for more money.
And, Detective, this is David Patterson. Is it possible that he knew that some of the people that were working there that night knew him?
We don't have any. He worked there April of 2020 to December of 2020.
So that was way before
yes,
she worked there.
Before. Yeah, so, I mean, all indications of by him changing clothes, that he knew he was going to hit this place, that he cased out the place. An investigative theory was be like, he knew the place, he knew where the money was, he knew what was going to be there, so that's why he targeted that place.
Detective Essig, talk to me about the surveillance video in the subway with the guest buckle. You guys even match the gait, how he walks, the ear pods in his ear. Talk us through about how just detailed and extensive this investigation is, and just it's really incredible, piece by piece, how you guys put the puzzle together and the EBT card that he went to the bodega and you were able to catch this guy.
Yeah, well, you know, we have video is crucial to our investigations now. We use best practices, you know, so we critique what we did right, what we did wrong in any case. And we go on. Video is one of the most important things that we use now. So we track him into the 116th Street Lexington Avenue station. And he's wearing that the mask. He's got gloves on. He's got the guest belt, as we talk about. And so we look at the pre and post at that 116th station house, train station. I'm sorry. What we look at is pre-shooting is a man who's walking the same. He's got the same gait. He's got the same height. And he has that distinctive earbud attached to his right pocket that we had put out a wanted flyer on after he does the shooting. So he becomes a person of interest. We track him up into a store where he makes a purchase. On that purchase, we're able to ID him as the Mr. Winston Glenn. And then we do some homework on our Glenn, and we find out he works at that Burger King. So now we really have a very interesting person of interest. So we have 18 train stops between 116th Street and Lexington. We do our workups on Mr. Glenn. We know he is a Brooklyn and a Queens gentleman. So we follow the train stations. We have him going into Brooklyn. We stake out the area with our people, our regional task force, which is a federal in New York City. They're the best in the world at tracking people down. And we pick him up last night at 8 o'clock in Brooklyn.
Chief, it's Judge Richard Weinberg, sir. I want to commend you and the department for doing a superb job in this investigation and the pickup of this very dangerous person. So based on what you're seeing, notwithstanding the noise out in the media that somehow this gentleman has mental health issues, it's clear from what you're telling us that this was a premeditated robbery.
Well, I mean, all indications point that way. He changes clothes. He goes to a store or a place of business that he worked in the past to do a robbery. So all indications are that this was premeditated.
Now, am I allowed to ask you about another situation in New York? You might not be on that, where they stole those cars.
The carjacking.
And the guy was going up the wrong way street, and the police officers were chasing him. And
those are the two carjackings in Manhattan. We will be – that investigation is ongoing. We will shortly be getting stuff out on that. Another great job by New York City police detectives. We will be announcing stuff shortly on that.
I saw some statistics that carjackings are up. Why is that?
We see people stealing cars and then using those cars very quickly in other crimes throughout the city. So you all have somebody do a carjacking, drive that car, and do 3, 4, 5 other robberies in succession. So the reason, a lot of dangerous people out there, but we got to get on top of that and put some of these people away who are doing some of these nasty, nasty crimes out there.
Detective, The police officers were there. In the old days, so 20, 30 years ago, he's driving a vehicle that I know in, where was it, Milwaukee or Wisconsin, somebody ran over 16 people with a car. So he is driving a dangerous vehicle. Is it not right if the police officer shot at the windshield and told him to stop or else?
we have very strict guidelines in shootings. You're in Manhattan, a lot of people, bullets can fly anywhere. We have very strict guidelines. Our police officers are very, very restrained in New York City. So,
would you have done that when you were a rookie 30 years ago?
Nah.
Depends what the patrol guidelines look like, John.
We are the most restrained police department in the entire world.
Detective,
and that's something we are proud of.
I guess I watch too many movies.
Well, John, I was thinking about that. Detective, this is David Patterson. Again, congratulations on how quickly you solved the case. But the detailed way that you went through how you solved it, I don't think I ever remember in an interview with a representative of the department the way you laid the whole thing out. It was like a movie, mm-hmm. and fortunately a tragic movie, but at least an ending where the perpetrator was caught.
Well, I think I said in my remarks, it was the emotions run, you're relieved. We got these guys. This was, anybody who watched that senseless killing of a young 19-year-old girl working on the midnight shift in a Burger King, it's
heartbreaking. Totally heartbreaking.
It really is. So you're relieved at that, but then, you have these other emotions. So proud of the detectives who worked that. They took this case personal. When you look at that, they really took it. I met with them today. You talk to them. They're exhausted. They haven't slept in 4 days. They've worked this case. So, I'm talking to you about with them, but they are the ones who deserve the credit in this. Those detectives out in the field, in the 2-5 detective squad, in the homicide squad, they really put their heart and soul into this case.
Detective Essig, on November 30th, this same suspect was arrested for a misdemeanor for menacing with a knife and assault. He was at a homeless shelter. He was released. I know that. Do you feel like the system kind of failed Crystal Byron Nieves? Because had he been held, had they looked at, this wasn't the first time he'd been menacing. He had a screwdriver before. He's attacked people. He has some sort of mental issues, it appears. Maybe she would be alive today.
My job as the chief of detectives, and our job in the police department, especially with the detectives, is to investigate the case, give the prosecutor the best possible case to prosecute. I think we do that in all our instances. The other parts of the criminal justice system are out of my hand. We do the best job we can in terms of the investigations.
Well, Detective, God bless you. God bless the NYPD. I'm glad you guys did a great job. And it's the best police force in the world.
Absolutely.
And we hope that you get the support in the next few years to make it even better. God bless you and God bless New York.
No, thank you, John. And people of New York City should be proud of their police department, especially what they did in this case.
We are proud.
Especially in this case, we are.
We are very proud in almost all cases. So,
thank you, John.
Thank
Have
you.
A great day, guys.
Thank you. Let's take a break, and we'll be back.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Today, 77 WABC celebrates the Russian New Year from the Kremlin's clock tower to the clock in Grand Central.
Today I want to show you how Russians celebrate the New Year.
Talk Radio 77 WABC.
This is John Katzimathidis. We're celebrating Russian New Year's all day long on WABC, but we did not invite
Putin?
President Putin in. And
he's busy.
Let me tell
he's
you.
He's going after the Ukraine.
John, Putin never fails to miss a public appearance. He was really upset when he heard
forward.
He wasn't coming
he was
on the show today.
Larry
really
Kudlow.
Upset.
What the heck is going on in America in the economy? It looks like we killed the bill, thanks to you. You were the proponent of that. But Jamie Dimon, I understand, was on CNBC today or another station, and he made some revelations. Tell us what's going on.
Well, look at, I don't know what Jamie said, but the big story right now breaking is the likelihood that Russia will invade Ukraine. And at least they're going to send troops and equipment into the Donbas area. And, John, you saw one of the tip-offs here is a big rally in oil, West Texas, and maybe more importantly, Brent European crude is up to $86 a barrel. That happened really fast. That has everything to do with market expectations of an invasion. We've been dilly-dallying here. The White House opposed Ted Cruz's amendment, which would have restored sanctions on Nord Stream 2. They opposed it, so they used the filibuster to defeat it. How ironic is that? We've done nothing. We haven't laid down sanctions on banking. We haven't laid down sanctions on the Nord Stream 2. We haven't laid down sanctions on trade with Russia. And there, look, the White House has changed its tune. Now they're saying an invasion is between middle January and middle February. We're already in middle January. Today's January 14th. And I don't know. They are weak. I don't know if they can handle this crisis again after what the bungling was done in Afghanistan. This is a very difficult moment. We're not going to send troops. I don't want to send American troops in. I want us to take stern actions on the economic front because Russia has a very weak economy, and we have got to regroup. We've got to show strength. You know, Ronald Reagan always argued strength at home equals strength abroad. Donald Trump always argued we have to be strong abroad and beef up our military. We should be selling the Ukraine all kinds of anti-tank, anti-aircraft and so forth. We're not doing it. That is the big story, John. And oil prices, if there is an invasion, oil prices will go way, way much higher. But they jumped, you know, $85, $86 a barrel right now. So that is a key moment.
Well, $85, $86, that if there is an invasion, I hope there isn't, I think you'll see $100, $110 oil.
Yeah, you could be right. I don't have any disagreements with that. Look, on the home front, this was a very bad week for Biden. He continues to lose everything. His presidency continues to unravel. He lost on the filibuster. He lost on the election takeover. He lost on the Supreme Court vaccine mandate. The big government socialist bill is, in fact, dead. His entire agenda is dead. He's lost on COVID. He's in very, very bad shape. And the amazing thing to me, John, you know, if you're running a business and you're losing money everywhere and your deals are going south, you're going to bring in some new people. You're going to fire some people and hire some people. And in the midst of this disaster called the Biden presidency, he's not making any changes at all. I am astonished by that. He's just letting it go. It makes you wonder whether he himself even realizes how bad the situation is. And this past week, you had a liberal poll, Quinnipiac, showed his approval at 33%. His approval rating is now below the outside temperature in Washington, D.C.
Is he, Larry, I hate to say it this way about a president of the United States, is he aware of his surroundings?
I just don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know. Because look at, you know, Trump, that's Donald Trump. Like him, don't like him, but his policies were very good. He had successful policies. But look, if things went wrong, Trump would knock heads. He would make replacements, okay? He made quite a few of them until he got the people he wanted who implemented his policy goals. Biden is not doing that. This is the most remarkable thing to me. So Biden is in the car, the motorcade, going up to Capitol Hill from the White House to address the Senate Democratic conference on the eve of this vote for the filibuster and the election takeover, which I completely oppose, completely, but whatever. So while he's driving up there, Kyrsten Sinema, the senator from Arizona, who has opposed his so-called Build Back Better bill, she's on the floor of the Senate giving her unambiguous opposition to changing the legislative filibuster, which means no election takeover. And then a few minutes later, again, before Biden even got to speak to the Democratic senators, Joe Manchin issued a statement following Sinema's speech. So he every time he goes up to the Hill to persuade his party, he loses. I mean, it's just another example of his
Larry, this David Patterson, it appears that in this case, he lost before he even got there.
Yes, that's correct. He lost before he got there. That's a good way to put it. And that shows you his weakness, all right? You know, Machiavelli always said it is better to be feared than loved, okay? Well, Biden is neither feared nor loved, and that's a very bad position for him to be in.
Now, it's very sad. You know, Biden is not losing. You know who's losing? The American people. Mm-hmm. The American people are getting poorer every day. Every time a barrel of oil goes up a dollar a barrel, the American poor get poorer. The American poor middle class get poorer. And we're just giving the money away to Putin while he's busy using our money to declare war on Ukraine. It's our money. We're paying him $86 a barrel.
Yeah, well, you know, you make your bed, you have to sleep in it. So he made his attack on fossil fuels, on Keystone, on ANWR, on public lands drilling. And so guess what? We're not drilling. We're still 2 million barrels below the peak in oil drilling that was in late 2019, early 2020. So, yeah, the world market is the price on the world market has gone up. It slipped a little bit with Omicron, and now it's coming back again because of what's going on, at least potentially, in the Ukraine. All these policies are bad. But I will say this. Look, ever the optimist I am, I'm very pleased. First of all, John Thune, who's a good senator in the Republican leadership, has decided to run for reelection. And Ron Johnson, a superb conservative senator, has decided to run for reelection. And my point here is the cavalry is on the way. The handwriting is on the wall. This is a failed presidency, and they're going to be replaced. The public is going to express its disapproval through the midterm elections. That's what our great democracy does. So I do believe help is on the way. I believe the cavalry is coming. But in the meantime, at least some of these bad policies are being stopped, okay? You know, $5 trillion in spending, another $2 trillion in higher taxes, that stuff is losing. An election takeover, that stuff is losing. Government regulatory overreach, that stuff is losing. So at least he's being denied. I'll grant, you know, that's probably the best part of it. But for Mr. Biden, he needs to clean house in the White House. But your question is an important question. Is he aware of his surroundings? Is he aware of how much his presidency has declined in just 1 year? I can't answer that. But I'll tell you this. They are going to have to clean house. If they don't and they continue down this left-wing, radical left-wing path, then they will sink lower and lower in the polls. They will become more and more unpopular. I mean, his speech in Atlanta was a disgrace.
Yes.
If you disagree with him about some of these election issues, all of a sudden you're a racist. You're Jefferson Davis or you're George Wallace. I mean, that was an insult. You know, African-American Republican Senator Tim Scott really blasted him for that. It's a disgrace, some of the things that Biden is doing.
Well, Larry, it not only was a disgrace, but it was not a politically feasible decision. When the two people that you need to vote to stop the filibuster are sitting there and you're basically accusing them of what you're accusing the Republicans. But I want to ask you this real quickly. To John's point, if we were thinking about saving the country right now, suppose President Biden took a few weeks off so we could go in there and do it. What were the changes you would make immediately?
The first thing I would do is get rid of Janet Yellen at the Treasury and put in Larry Summers. Because from the very beginning, Summers has called the inflation story correctly. He is opposing government spending and entitlement spending. He's a heavyweight. I know him quite well. I've known him for 40 years. He was a junior kid on the Council of Economic Advisors when I worked for Reagan. You got to make some replacements in your national security advisor and your secretary of state. You need a new chief of staff. He's got a clean house. He's got to say to the public, you elected me as a moderate. I've been governing as a radical leftist. I'm going to go back to being a moderate. That's what Bill Clinton did 25 years ago. The trouble is Joe Biden is no Bill Clinton, and the people around Biden are even worse. But he's got to show the public that the bait and switch is over. You know, the bait was vote for me, I'm a moderate. The switch was I'm governing like a radical leftist. He's got to get back to the center where they can do business with the Republican Party in a 50-50 Senate.
Larry Kudlow, you're one smart guy, and I agree with you 100%. We're in deep doo-doo, and something has to happen soon. And I am scared the way Jay Powell is talking, too, sometimes. He went out and said but they may tell the banks that the banks should attack the fossil fuel industry. I mean, which is crazy. Yep. That's not the job of a Fed chair, you know?
You know, this stuff, if you go back and read the great book, Nobel Prize winning Friedrich Hayek, the name of the book was written in the late 40s, The Road to Serfdom. It just means that government administrators and government regulators want to run the country, not the free enterprise system, not men and women in large and small businesses, okay, not freedom and democracy, but a bunch of D.C. swamp regulators running the country. And that has got to stop. And you look at the polls, and it's very unpopular. So we'll see.
Larry Kudlow, happy Russian New Year. God bless you, and God bless everything you do, and we'll catch up again soon.
Thank you, John. Take care. Very much.
Wow. Let me tell you, he's one smart guy, and the country is not
one. One thing that didn't come up in this discussion is that Putin is making noises about putting some sort of military presence in Cuba and Venezuela.
That's why I'm not agreed that necessarily he's going to invade. Putin doesn't do stupid things. But on the other hand, if he invades, we're not going to go back up Ukraine. I don't think we're going to back up Ukraine. We're not going to send any soldiers in there.
So, John, this is fascinating. You had said a few weeks ago, and I never thought about it until you said it.
Was I right on the price of oil? I've been right all along.
Oh, no. I know about the price of oil. But the idea that the United States didn't want any arms put in Cuba back in 1961, and therefore Russia has a pretty good argument about NATO going deeply into the Ukraine now.
Yeah. It's NATO is not going in. Are you kidding? He'll cut off Germany's heating oil. I mean, the Germans will freeze to death. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to continue to celebrate Russian New Year.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Today, 77 WABC celebrates the Russian New Year.
New Year's in Russia is about a lot of food, lots of salads, traditional Russian food, and celebrating the New Year's.
Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Happy New Year. With us today is Cato Hashnoff, and he lives down in St. Petersburg, Florida, and he's been working with my wife, Margo Katsimatidis, for the last X amount of years, putting on a gala for Russian New Year in St. Petersburg, Florida, and he's helped us today with preparing for Russian New Year's in New York. And Cato, how are you? How's the weather down in St. Petersburg?
John, it's fantastic. I mean, it's like 72 degrees outside, and I'm wearing, for this festivities, I'm still wearing my shorts and T-shirts, okay?
Wow, it's cold up here. And how cold is it in Moscow?
Oh, they're really down there. In Celsius, it's like minus 11 degrees, my friends were saying earlier today, so...
We were supposed to get a couple of calls in for some friends of mine in Moscow to tell us about the they were celebrating Russian New Year's in Moscow today. To tell us about the festivities. Have you heard anything?
Well, I'm on the social networking, in this case, in, with Instagram, and I'm connected. A lot of American expats are out there who have been there just as long as I were, was out there for 25 years, and their rate surpassed my years. So, yeah, they're celebrating New Year's in full swing.
And what do they do in Moscow when they celebrate New Year's?
You know, it's an old tradition that never really died, right? Because the reason why it's celebrated is because it's a Julian versus a Gregorian calendar, right? So what they're doing is they're keeping the same ideas, but they just don't. Russians like to party, and so if there's another reason to party, they will just continue on doing it. So what do? It's a repeat of the New Year's part two, all right? They'll go out and celebrate with the champagnes and plenty of foods. I'm pretty sure you have a copy, carbon copy of what you have out there right now with you, right? You have Marivana, I believe, supplied the foods for you guys,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. Everything went well. I ate too much.
The caviar, the vodkas, the pierogies, the herring, the salmon. And it's also about walking out in the snow and just enjoying life.
When I was in St. Pete with you last weekend, and we celebrated Russian New Year's last Saturday night, and actually it was the day after Russian Christmas.
Right.
You had told the story, and I'm sure all New Yorkers want to hear this story. The story about
Santa Claus and
Santa Claus, Mr. Frost, and tell us that story.
All right, it is an interesting story, right? So, we all know that Santa Claus here in America, right, is usually in red, dressed in his red gear, right, red costume. Well, in Russia, they have traditionally Santa Claus is Father Frost, which is Ded Moroz. And traditionally, he usually wears a blue costume. And you could think that Moroz, meaning frost, right? It's blue, you know, ice blue. And the reason why here in America we have Santa Claus in red, a lot of people don't know this, but naturally, Coca-Cola did the marketing stunt back in the early 1900s to promote their brand, and they moved up with Santa Claus being in red. So, in the
90s, it was Coca-Cola. In what year did they start with Santa Claus dressed in red?
I, on top of my head, I can't remember that. But it's in the early 1900s when they were pushing their idea how to market their beverage. So that's how they moved up with that. So in the 90s, when I went to Russia for a six-month stunt, and I ended up staying there for 25 years. And what was interesting, when there became a Cola Wars, when Coca-Cola came out to finally serve their beverages in Russia, Pepsi has been doing that since Nixon years, right? It was the exchange, the joint venture, the exchange between Stoli and Pepsi Cola, right, in the United States. So in the 90s, there was a cola war again, but what Pepsi did was they started marketing their Pepsi Cola with the blue Santa Claus or blue Father Frost, Ded Moroz, compared to the red Santa Claus, Coca-Cola. And they had that for a couple of years in their marketing. And it was actually quite interesting because you see these two rivals fighting each other off with this marketing campaign. And, you know, they won because who won?
Who won?
Because Pepsi-Cola.
Red or blue?
Blue.
Pepsi won. Wow, Pepsi-Cola won the blue Santa Claus.
Isn't it great that the Santa Claus in Russia is a Democrat?
Here, too.
Well, Cato, that is a great story. I want to thank you for everything you do for the Russian people down in St. Petersburg, Florida. And we have another guest I have to take. But God bless you and God
thank
bless
you,
everything
John.
You do.
You guys are great. Merry Christmas and Happy
Merry
New Year.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And I understand. Thank you, Cato. And I understand we have another guest.
We have Marina Kovalyov. Am I saying it correctly, Marina, your last name? You're the founding president, director. Tell me, how do I say Happy New Year in Russian first?
Novom Godom.
Novom Godom. I only know Pasiba. It means thank you in Russian.
And yes, yes. But still, you have a great pronunciation.
Oh, thank you. So tell us, Marina, you co-founded the Russian-American Foundation with the goal of building a bridge between the U.S. and the former Soviet through art, cultural initiatives, and, is, of course, our young people, right? They're the future. So tell us about it, your work that you do in the Russian community.
Well, we have several projects, but maybe the one I would like to talk to you about today is related to the winter, to the holiday, because we are running a so-called Bolshoi Ballet Masterclass. And Bolshoi Ballet Masterclass, this year celebrating 15th anniversary in the United States, and it is our joint venture between the Academy of Bolshoi Ballet and Russian American Foundation that I'm running together with my daughter, Rina Kirshner. So why I said the ballet and the winter, et cetera, because everyone knows that it is a very symbolic for the winter to take your kids and to go to see the Nutcracker. It is like a symbol of the winter, a symbol of the New Year, of Christmas, and on and on. And that ballet is created by a famous Russian composer, Tchaikovsky. But it is very interesting that a lot of composers, even at the late 19th century, were coming to United States to have premiere of their musical...
Rachmaninoff, too, no?
Rachmaninoff, right. Rachmaninoff lived in...
What are you doing today for Russian New Year? Are you doing anything special? Are you having special food at home?
Yes. This is the New Year, as we call it, Old New Year, or in Russian, Starый Новый Год. It starts, it started yesterday night, and it goes on for a whole day today. And it is a very beautiful tradition. And we gather with our friends and family. We cook. Everyone brings something special. There are several beautiful dishes that we make, especially for that night. Of course, we are drinking vodka. We love
no.
vodka.
What kind of vodka are you drinking? 110 proof.
Now they got our interest here.
Now you got our interest.
But we usually drink infused vodka. And by the way, the best infused vodka, I think is probably even better than in Russia, is in a beautiful Russian restaurant, Marivanna. I don't know if you ever been there, but it's a great place.
Where is
place.
It? Brighton Beach?
No, it's in Manhattan on 20th between Park and Broadway. Beautiful.
Marivanna.
You can
all right.
like...
Mr. Patterson is going to drive me there now. Well, thank you so much. We will definitely go there to have some good Russian food. Thank you so much, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, and I would like to invite you guys. The dinner is on me.
Thank you so much. God bless you. Thank you. It's a very nice lady. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we're coming back for an update on the COVID crisis from Dr. Peter Mihalov.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Today, 77 WABC celebrates the Russian New Year, featuring celebrities, interviews, entertaining and informative talk. Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Well, no music? My God. Happy New Year, Dr. Peter Michalos. How are you?
Happy Russian New Year to everyone out there, and congratulations to the Russian people, because we always have to remember they did have the first successful COVID vaccine, and without them also, we would have never won World War II, and they did have the first person in space, and now they even have the first widespread use of an oral antiviral, and they seem to be able to get it, and we're having trouble getting it in our pharmacies. It's called Avifavir. And when you take it, 65% of the people test negative for COVID within 4 days, and 90% test negative within 10 days. So the Russian people are doing quite well in their battle against COVID. So we have to respect them for that. And I hope we'll be even better and stronger allies. As far as COVID in New York and America, the majority of cases are now the Omicron variant. The good news is that the trajectory shows that the rate of spread is that the peak will be in the next 45 days, because then we're going to see a sudden drop in cases as the virus is running out of people to symptomatically affect. The vaccines are not really effective against, they're not variant specific, and they don't seem to stop you from catching the Omicron variant. But the good news is that the vaccine reduces your chance of hospitalization or death fivefold. So the advice that my colleagues and infectious disease colleagues are saying is to avoid large gatherings really for the next 45 days. And that if you do test positive and have symptoms and have any pre-existing conditions, your doctor can prescribe the oral antiviral pills if you are able to get them, or the GlaxoSmithKline monoclonal antibody, which seems to be quite effective against the Omicron variant. And the other good news is that the federal government is really stepping up. Governor Hochul requested help, and on January 24th, the Department of Defense military medical teams are going to be supporting New York City health and hospital facilities in Coney Island, which we love, and North Central Bronx, and also upstate. We have about 80 national ambulance contract teams that are in upstate New York and helping with 9/11 and patient transport to hospitals and emergencies, and the federal disaster medical teams are already up in Erie County Medical Center and the SUNY Syracuse. The only issue we have right now is that people are upset because they can't seem to get the oral antivirals or monoclonal antibodies. So we need Operation Warp Speed to be activated again to get all these treatments to people, because even though people are not being intubated or dying, they still are getting pretty sick, and they're not feeling well, and they are ending up in the hospital getting oxygen, but not necessarily in the ICUs. So that's something that we have to continue. We need to get better instant testing. The other interesting news was the NCAA announced that if people had COVID and they had antibodies to it, that they would accept that as immunity in lieu of vaccination. So that's a big deal, especially after the Supreme Court case where employers over 100 employees don't necessarily can mandate the vaccine. But it looks like we're turning the corner, and the only thing I worry about is if we develop a new super variant with what's called recombination, if multiple strains infect one person and you get a new strain. But right now things are looking good. So the next 45 days we have to be careful. And then all the trajectory shows that we may be out of this thing in March, and it just might be like a regular annual thing that we're going to experience. And as a country, I think we're learning we're going to have to stockpile PPE, and that healthcare is national security, and we have to take care of our supply chain with pharmaceuticals.
Is Omicron killing Delta?
Well, it's not that it's killing it, that it's spreading so fast. It's like faster. It's like think of it as a race. If you're in a race and Omicron and Delta are next to each other, Omicron is getting into the cell and taking over before Delta can even try. So because it's so fast, It's overwhelming the Delta, so it's not sort of killing it, but it is getting us infected first. Then you start launching antibodies, so by the time Delta shows up in the race, in the marathon race, you already have the antibodies to attack it.
Is Omicron a first cousin of Delta, or is it very similar or completely different?
It's similar. It's just like a fraternal twin, if you want to call it that. And it has a lot of similarities, but there are changes on the spike. The spike is like the little knife or key that is used to enter the cell, and it's just become a little bit sharper. So by being a little sharper, it can puncture and enter the cell and penetrate and infect us faster. So that's the difference. That's why it's spreading like wildfire throughout the country and throughout the world. But again, the good news is that that's going to bring us closer to herd immunity at a much, much faster rate. And we're also going to see next year that they're going to offer variant-specific vaccines. But, you know, by then, hopefully this will have calmed down so much that it won't be as necessary. And with having fantastic, readily available antivirals, it'll be just like when you get the flu, you take a Tamiflu and you get better quickly. And I think that's where we're headed. We just need to crank up our manufacturing.
Dr. Peter Michalos, thank you for the information. Thank you for keeping us smarter than the average person. And thank you for what you do for all New Yorkers and all Americans. God bless you and God bless America. Thank you so much.
Thanks for getting the truth out and happy Russian New Year.
Happy Russian New Year. Now, I think there's a call coming in from Moscow. Let's see.
We have Justin Galloway and Irene Belanova.
Justin, is Vladimir with you?
Hello, Mr. Gatsby. No, he's not with us.
Hi, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Tell us about Russian New Year in Moscow.
Oh, it's beautiful here. We actually just came back from the Bolshoi.
We saw Swan Lake. It was mesmerizing. It was incredible. Then we went out for a very long dinner with Irene's family.
And tell us about how do the Russians celebrate New Year's?
So tonight we had a classic Russian New Year's. So it's old New Year's. So we technically have two. On the first, it's like where things are profound and you have to invite everyone you know, lest anyone get offended. But this night is really for your family and your closest friends. So we just gathered with a small circle and we have classic Russian dishes and, of course, vodka. Lots of it.
A lot of vodka.
Is it good vodka?
Indeed. Do you shoot off fireworks? Tell us.
Not in the center of Moscow. We're in very close proximity to the Kremlin, so I don't think that would be a great move.
What does Vladimir Putin do on a night like this? Is it knowledgeable?
I don't know. I don't actually know. I haven't turned on the TV.
Probably celebrates with family because from what I understand, it's more of a traditional holiday. We went out to dinner with probably 15, 18 of Irene's family's closest friends, wonderful people. And then on the actual New Year's, it was more of the fireworks and traditional festivities.
And Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin has a speech, an annual address that he gives on the first. So that kind of takes care of the national address in terms of Old New Year as well, because it's just a symbolic thing that we do now.
Justin, make sure you're not recruited to go to the front.
Absolutely not. But everyone has been really, really nice and warm and welcoming.
That's great.
Thank you so much for calling in from Moscow. God bless you and have a good time. And hopefully we'll see you soon.
Thank you so much, Justin Galloway. And Irene Belanova, how do you say Happy New Year? S Novim Godom?
Novim Godom. Novim Shestim.
Novim Godom.
There you go.
Well, thank you, and have a good time. Enjoy.
Thank you very much.
I bet you everybody thought Vladimir Putin was going to call it.
Well, on your show, you never know.
You never know.
You just don't know.
I actually requested it.
I know you did.
I only got Justin.
I bet if it was it wasn't the time difference, he probably would have called in.
You never know. Well, opa! Don't break my dishes. Judge Weinberg, thank you. Governor Patterson, Lydia Serrani, have a great weekend. And all and everybody, Happy New Year. And pray for New York, pray for America, pray for the world. God bless America.